This is Audible.
The Virgin and the Beast, a dark erotic Beauty and the Beast tale, written by Stacia Black, read for you by Cameron O'Malley. Chapter 1. You can't fire me. I stare across the desk at my boss, shocked. When he called me in here this morning, I thought it was to talk about a promotion, which, considering everything that's happened over the past 2 weeks, would be some very welcome news. I'm your top-earning junior associate, I sputter. I single-handedly closed the Johnson account.
An account which we're about to lose because of your father's association with this company through you.
I'm not my father, I say through gritted teeth. I have nothing to do with his company. He made damn sure of that over the years. Van Bauer and Sons is a strictly male-only operation and has been for 3 generations. No daughters allowed. A thought which still rankles me, even now, though I should be thanking my lucky stars I'm not caught up in the scandal and FBI scrutiny. Dan shakes his head at me, the fluorescent light shining off his bald spot.
It just doesn't make for good optics to have a Van Bauer associated with our company right now, Melanie.
He can't be serious. Look, I'm happy to change my name, legally, if that's what it takes, but I just bought an apartment in Manhattan. I can't afford to lose this job.
Your father defrauded some of the most influential people in this city.
Dan cuts me off, slashing a hand through the air.
Not to mention the thousands of regular Americans who lost their pensions to his scheme. New World Media and Design cannot and will not be associated in any way with Frank Van Bauer. You're out. Today.
My mouth drops open, 10 rebuttals on my tongue. I glance down, momentarily distracted by the giant New World Media and Design paperweight Dan has on his desk. It's a horrible logo, created from a giant, round-tipped arrow shooting out of what I think is supposed to be a mountain range. The whole thing just looks incredibly phallic. In stressful situations, my mind likes to focus on super useful details like this. But really, what am I supposed to say to that? That it's completely unfair. I've spent my entire professional career trying to make it on my own instead of leaning on Dad's business connections. And I've done it, too. I've fought tooth and nail to climb the corporate ladder since I graduated early from Brown 6 years ago. To prove I could do it, that I was just as good as the son I know Dad always wished he had. And now? If this is any indication, I'll never be able to work in this town again. And Dad, he's facing jail time, as in a life sentence. I bite back the threatening tears, knowing if there's one rule above all others, it's never let the bastards see they affect you. Any emotion, especially tears, in a corporate environment will be mocked as womanly weakness and held against you for years. I stand abruptly and hold my chin high. This is wrongful termination. Dan looks at me disdainfully.
I already told you we almost lost the Johnson deal over this.
I can't help but swallow hard at that. Only weeks before, Dan was falling all over himself praising me for bringing in the multi-million-dollar contract.
Your very presence at the company weakens our brand, which gives us perfectly legal means for termination. Not to mention that the CFO himself personally lost millions to your father's little scam. Be glad you're leaving with a severance package, Ms. Van Bauer.
He stands and leans over his desk.
Now remove your things immediately. Your ID badge will be deactivated at noon.
I grit my teeth and start toward the door. Take the high road, Mel. They go low, you go high. At the last second, I twirl around. The company's logo looks like a penis and balls. Just an FYI. I smile sweetly and then stomp out the doorway. When I get down to my office, all of my co-workers are eyeing me like I'm a contestant on the latest reality show about to head for the chopping block. God, did everyone see this coming except me? I knew it was bad when the news broke about Dad 1.5 weeks ago. Bail was set at $1.5 million. The bank froze all his assets. I was only able to pay it by not only using up everything in the savings Grandpa left for me, but also by putting a second mortgage on the apartment I'd just bought. Not imagining that I'd have any suddenly dramatic life expenses, I'd put a lot of cash down on the place, so I had some equity in it, which I then needed right back to get my father out of prison. I bang into my office, ready to throw things in a box and get the hell out of here as fast as possible. But I stop in my tracks when I see a stranger sitting in one of the two chairs across from my desk. He's an impeccably dressed older gentleman. I was always around wealth growing up, but over the past few years especially, I've learned to pay attention to the small details that differentiate true wealth from the cheap imitation of it. So I recognize the elegant tailoring and fine cloth that indicate this man's suit was custom-made and expensive, and the fact that his cufflinks appear to be real gold, maybe an heirloom. Grandpa used to have some like that. The man's black wingtips are polished and expensive. I always check men's footwear when sizing up a potential client. This guy is real money, the serious kind. Too bad I didn't pay more attention when Dad started wearing knockoff Louis Vuitton shoes a few years ago after Mom died. She'd left him years before, but he was always stupid over her. I knew he was struggling. I just thought it was personal. I never dreamed the business was in trouble, too. Once when I dropped by to check on him, I caught him at home, drunk at 11 a.m., sitting on his couch in nothing but his boxers. It was obvious he'd been crying. He yelled at me to get out, and Dad never yelled. Then he didn't talk to me for a whole month. When he finally invited me out to one of Manhattan's most exclusive restaurants for dinner, a place you go to be seen as much as for the exquisite cuisine, he was in his most expensive suit and smiling his salesman's grin. Business was good. He was hobnobbing with the rich and famous, and all was well in the world. Or so it seemed, anyway. He always put on such a good face. I had no idea he was digging himself deeper and deeper until it all toppled like a house of cards. "Sorry," I say to the stranger, suddenly feeling the weight of reality like a lead weight on my shoulders. "All my appointments today are canceled." I lift my hands. "As of 10 minutes ago, I'm no longer employed here."
"You are Melanie Van Bauer?"
the stranger asks. When I nod, he stands and holds out a hand to shake. He's of medium height, maybe pushing 70, with a full head of neatly cropped white hair.
"Yes," I say, drawing out the word as I reach forward and take his hand. "You can call me Owens," he says with a pleasant smile, giving my hand a firm shake before releasing it.
Then he gestures for me to sit behind my desk.
"Please, sit. I have a business proposition to discuss with you."
I tilt my head sideways at him. "Look, I just told you I was fired. I don't know what kind of..."
"Your father is going to be imprisoned for the rest of his life,"
he starts with no preamble.
"Probably for multiple consecutive life sentences once all the gory details of his Ponzi scheme are trotted out in the court of public opinion. That sort of thing is not supposed to affect the jury. But we both know this will be tried in the news for months before it ever makes it to the courtroom. The public is crying for blood, and believe me, no one treats a man who steals the retirement pensions of nice little old ladies well in prison."
"Oh, God, not another one. I'm so not in the mood for this. Get out." I point toward the door. "Dad and I have been harassed ever since the news broke. People camp outside my apartment, flinging accusations and worse. I got pelted with a tomato a few days ago, a bag of dog crap the day before that. We've been getting death threats over social media and in the mail. I seriously don't need this bullshit right now." "I don't know who let you in here, but I'll call secure..." Mr. Owens holds his hand up.
"What if I told you that you could spare him all of it? That it's within your power to help him?"
I pause with my desk phone midair, about to dial security. What the hell is this guy talking about? Seeing my hesitation, he hurries to continue on.
"I have an interested third party who can get him to a non-extradition country and set him up comfortably for the rest of his life."
I bark out a laugh and look around. "What is this? You have the office bugged, and you're trying to get me on tape saying something incriminating? I told you bastards I had nothing to do with this company, and no matter how deep you dig, you won't find me anywhere in the records." I turn around and speak to the wall, carefully enunciating every word. "Daddy, dearest, didn't think a girl was good enough to work at his precious investment brokerage firm. So guess what? I never stepped one foot on that property or touched a single file on any of his computers."
"There's no trap, Miss Van Bauer,"
Mr. Owens says calmly.
"And there's no need to raise your voice. I'm happy to prove my identity,
though at this time I cannot reveal the name of the party I represent. I turn back around to him, and he really doesn't look like he's joking. In fact, this guy looks so stoic and serious, I'm not sure he's ever laughed at a joke in his life.
Here are my credentials.
He produces some papers from his inner jacket pocket and hands them to me.
Feel free to Google me, as they say.
I check out the fancy, embossed, watermarked papers. They bear both his name, Francis Roger Owens III, and the company name, Owens, Jenkins, and Rosenberg Trust. I take his suggestion and pull out my phone to look him up. A few taps later, and it becomes clear that Owens, Jenkins, and Rosenberg Trust is one of the top New York wealth management firms. When I search images, I see the man in front of me standing at the Met Gala with half of New York's elite. There's a picture of him with Mark Zuckerberg, and one with the actor from that famous zombie show. I look up from the phone, my mouth going dry. What exactly is it you're proposing? And why is such an obviously powerful man coming to the daughter of an infamous investment broker? He smiles. It's the smile of a man who knows he's about to close a deal. Not kind or unkind, just the lift of both sides of his mouth and the glint in his eyes that say whatever deal he's about to offer, I'm in no position to say no.
It's a small thing, really, when you compare it to saving the rest of your father's life. He had you when he was so young. He was only 49 years old. One hopes he has equally as many years left to live.
Mr. Owens leans forward.
You can make all those years a gift to him. He can live a life of luxury, instead of enduring God knows what in a supermax prison facility.
Oh, shit. Why is he still pitching? It's not good when someone sells and sells the pitch without talking costs. Bottom line, I say, cutting him off when he looks like he's going to keep spouting BS about what a wonderful life Dad's going to magically have without paying any consequences for destroying the lives of all those people. Mr. Owens smiles again.
All my client is asking for is what could be as little as a year of your life. A year of your life to give your father the rest of his.
Doing what? I demand, the hairs on the back of my neck prickling. Mr. Owens drops the smile and pulls a contract out of his briefcase. He slides it across the desk to me.
My client needs an heir. You've been vetted as an acceptable candidate. You will stay at his residence and sleep with him until you come to be with child, then remain until you give birth. Then both you and your father are completely free of debt. In fact, you'll be well compensated for your time. And the federal government will never be able to touch your father for the rest of his natural life.
What the? Sleep with? Give birth? He can't be fucking serious. He gives me that let's-close-a-deal smile again, then pulls a pen out of his briefcase and holds it out across the table for me.
If you'll just sign here and here,
he indicates two places in a long contract,
then we can get started.
Chapter 2. I stand up as tall as my 5'6" frame will allow, well, 5'8" with my killer 2-inch heels, and stare Mr. Owens down with every bit of haughty contempt bred into me by 3 generations of wealth and privilege. Get the hell out of my office.
I'll just leave these here with you while you think it over. Here's my number.
He produces his card, also from his inner coat pocket, and lays it on the contract.
But do call soon. My client is a man of...
He pauses, as if looking for the perfect word.
Peculiar habits. He doesn't like to be kept waiting.
I scoff in outrage and sweep both the contract and card into the trash beside my desk. Because while there's all that wasp breeding in my DNA, there's also my mother's Latina blood in me. Well, you can tell your client to go stuff it, because I'm not a prostitute or baby mama or whatever the hell you think. I break off, shuddering at the thought of all of it. Having sex with some disgusting stranger? This is just fucking insane. How dare this man, however powerful he is, come in here and basically offer me a job as a prostitute? Dad being in the news so much has officially brought out all the crazies. Get out, I shout. Mr. Owens doesn't seem fazed by how upset I am. He just steps back from the desk and taps his wristwatch.
Tick-tock, Miss Van Bauer. Only 45 minutes before security will come and physically escort you from the building. Better get packing.
With that, he turns and heads for the door, but not before tossing over his shoulder.
I look forward to your call.
I walk in the door to my apartment at a little before 2 in the afternoon. I couldn't find a box, so I had to stuff my large purse with all my belongings. It's bulging so much I have to hold it in front of me like a papoose to keep everything in. Like a baby. I shudder even at the thought. I hate babies. I mean, that sounds bad, but I never want to be a mother. Lord knows my own mom was a bad enough example to put me off the idea forever. God, that guy propositioning me like that was the most insane thing I've ever experienced. And that's saying something, considering I just learned 2 weeks ago that Dad tried to pull off the biggest Ponzi scheme since Madoff. Mel? Calls my dad's voice in a panic. Melanie, is that you? My dad rounds the corner of my foyer, and his face crumples in relief. Thank God. Why haven't you been answering your cell? He's wearing pajama pants and a t-shirt stained with last night's spaghetti sauce. He looks like a shadow of his former self. I stare at him, confused. My battery probably died. What's going on, Dad? I drop my purse with a loud thump. He rushes forward and grabs me in a crushing hug. I tried to call your office line, too, and no one answered. You don't know how worried I've been. He squeezes me even tighter. Okay. Dad and I are close, but we aren't exactly the touchy-feely type. I can't remember the last time he hugged me. I got fired. No point in beating around the bush. Unlike him, I can't keep up a perfect sheen that everything's A-okay when in reality it's going down the shitter. He takes a step back. What? Why? You're the best damn ad account manager they've seen in years. I just stare at him. I've never heard such high praise from him. Then I heave out a sigh. Daddy, I... How do I tell the father I've always tried so hard to impress that I got fired from my dream job because of him, because of the Van Bauer name? He waves a hand, but then the same hand is quickly raking through his hair. None of that matters right now. We've got bigger problems. Everything's just... He's scaring me. All of this came as an insane shock when it blew up 2 weeks ago. My dad, the man I'd looked up to forever, defrauding all those people, lying to me, to everyone, for years. He starts pacing back and forth in the entryway and finally heads into the living room. I follow him. All the blinds are drawn and the TV is muted, flashing some cable news show. Used plates and junk food packages litter the coffee table. Seeing the mess only heightens the anxiety churning in my stomach. None of this is like my dad. Usually he's all about organization, and he's a fitness nut. He works out more than me, and he's 49. Baby, he starts again. The DA wants to make a deal. You see, I got into business with some very bad men, and... He bites his lip and presses a hand to his temple, like he can't bear to tell me the rest. Okay, this is beyond scaring me. I've never seen him like this. He is freaking me out. I go over to him and grab his forearms to stop his pacing. Dad, what men? What the hell is going on? It's then that I see just how bloodshot his eyes are. His breath doesn't smell like alcohol, but it's like he hasn't slept in days. I've heard him up at night, and I've just tried not to think about it. My unspoken mantra has been, go to work and avoid, avoid, avoid. The government seized all his assets, including the Upper East Side apartment where he lived. He's been staying with me ever since he got out on bail last weekend, and he's been different, not the confident man I grew up with. But I've never seen him look so freaked out, so abjectly terrified. We have to get whatever money's left together. His eyes shift back and forth wildly. I have to get out of the country. I'll make a run for Mexico, maybe find someone who can get me to South America. Dad, stop it. What the hell is he talking about? You're scaring me. What's going on? Growing up, he and I were close. After Mom left when I was a kid, I used to spend every afternoon after school in his office, coloring or doing homework in the corner and listening to him wheel and deal over the phone. I told myself that when I was older, I'd be just like him. But then one day it all stopped. He said it wasn't professional to have his daughter at work like that, even though he'd never had a problem with it before. He used to show me off to all his co-workers and brag about my good grades to anyone who would listen. But then a nanny started picking me up from school and taking me home to our huge and incredibly empty Manhattan apartment. Most days, Dad tried to get home in time for dinner and to help me with my homework afterwards if I needed it. We always still did the Sunday crossword together, but it was never quite the same. And then, cue the pitched battles when I was looking at colleges and started talking about working at the family company, which was when he dropped the big old bomb that Van Bauer and Sons meant exactly that. Sons. No girls allowed. Honey, he finally looks at me, and devastation is clearly written all over his face. Dropped brows, dark circles under his eyes. You don't know how hard I've worked to keep this from ever touching you. He sinks down onto the couch behind him and clutches his head in his hands. But no matter how hard I worked to keep it all afloat, I just kept getting in deeper and deeper. Is he talking about the Ponzi scheme? I've asked him. Of course I've asked him why he did it. How could he have been so stupid? Well, I didn't word it like that exactly, but still. Why, Daddy? What happened? I sit down on the couch beside him and take his hand. It's a reversal of when I was little, of when I'd be afraid and he'd take my hand and all the monsters and scary things in the dark would disappear. That was his power back then. He was my hero. He could do anything. He stares at the ground, and for several long moments, I think he's still not going to tell me. I sigh and go to pull my hand back, but he clutches it even tighter. After your mom left, I went through a bad patch. I started gambling. I almost lost everything. He squeezes his eyes shut, and I can see how much it pains him to admit the weakness. I swallow hard to keep back my shock. I pulled my head out of my ass eventually, but not in time. I borrowed money from some bad men to pay back my debts. He finally looks over at me, his eyes watery and red. And then I had to borrow from my legitimate clients to pay them back, and it kept snowballing from there. I thought if the company just made enough money, if I could just float it for a little while longer, I could pay everyone back. He starts shaking his head, but it got out of control. His mouth tightens into a hard line, and he squeezes my hand again. But I swore none of it would ever touch you. You'd never be part of the business. You'd never be tainted by my mess. A cry I can't keep back erupts from my throat. So it was never because I wasn't... I can barely get it out, but it has to be asked. A son? His forehead creases in a pained look, and he shakes his head. I hated that I had to make you believe that, but all that mattered was keeping you safe. He pulls me into his arms again, and I collapse against his chest. Dad, oh God, how could he? Why didn't you just tell me? Maybe I was too young to understand at first, but I'm a grown woman now. You could have confided in me. He holds me to him while tears leak out of my eyes. His heart is thumping strong underneath my ear. I couldn't. I can hear how thick his throat is as he says it. I was so ashamed. I'm a foolish old man. I scoff as I pull back from him, swiping at my eyes. You're only 49, Dad. Hardly old. He just shakes his head. I've got to get out of the country, honey. The men I was talking about are dangerous, even after I paid them back. His gaze moves toward the window like he can't bear to look at me while he talks about this. I was never able to untangle my business from them. They're powerful men. He moves his palms down his pajama pants. They wanted money, favors. The DA suspects their involvement, and he's offered me a deal if I flip on them. I'm not stupid enough to take it. A haunted look comes into his eyes. But it's obvious I'm a loose end they want tied up. Tied up? Does he mean like... While I'm holed up in the apartment, they can't get to me.
His face crumples again.
But baby, now they're threatening you.
He walks to the attached dining room and comes back with a large envelope with several black and white photographs. All of me. All with a big red X marked over my face.
I don't care if I die, my father whispers, but I can't bear to let anything happen to you.
My gaze freezes on the pictures. Me in my workout gear, It could have been yesterday or any of the other Mondays, Wednesdays, or Sundays I go to my gym. But the second picture, I'm wearing a necklace that I rarely put on. I wore it yesterday in a sad attempt to jazz up my day and feel more feminine and pretty in my usual pantsuit and power blazer. A cold shiver works its way down my spine. Someone was watching me and taking creepy pictures? Someone who wants my dad dead? Who's doing this? I whisper. Dad shakes his head.
These men want me dead because of what I know. I'm not telling you or anyone else.
What about protective custody if you did testify? Can't the police... But Dad's already shaking his head.
You don't understand the power these men wield.
He swallows.
My only chance is to disappear. Get south of the border and keep running.
His gaze goes distant.
You should be safe as long as I'm gone.
I tug away from him and run my hands through my short hair. Holy crap, this is all real. My dad, he... I swallow hard against the tears. And this whole time, he was protecting me, not shunning me from the business because I was a girl. Do you know someone who can help you to disappear? God, from all he said and the pictures, they're probably watching the house right now. I look to the windows that he's shuttered. He must have had the same thought. He reaches a shaking hand up to rub my chin.
That's why we need to get together whatever money we have. I'm sure we can find someone, for the right price.
So that's a no about him knowing anyone who can help. Not surprising, since he burned all his bridges by defrauding almost everyone he was in business with. I look up at him, suddenly knowing what I have to do. I walk over to him and squeeze his trembling hand. Then I head back into the foyer and lean over to grab my purse. I dig through all the crap I shoved in it and pull out the crumpled contract at the bottom. Then I fish around for the card. Yes, I kept them. Desperate times and all that. Though, God, I didn't even know the half of it. My mouth goes dry as I withdraw my phone from the front pocket of my purse. Now my hands are the ones shaking. I look down at the card, thinking of how confident Mr. Owens would be that I'd call. Like there was no question that I'd be forced into this position. Am I really willing to...
Sleep with him until you come to be with child.
Mr. Owens' words come back in perfect clarity, and a shudder goes through my body. I almost drop the phone back into my purse, but then my eyes catch on the photos of me Dad still clutching in his hands. If what Dad's saying is true, this is life or death. I dial the number. Mr. Owens picks up on the first ring.
Miss Van Bauer, how delightful to speak to you again so soon.
Chapter 3.
No, stop, wait! You didn't let me say goodbye!
I scream, fighting the grip of two men who drag me up the front stairs of a huge resort-type building in the middle of nowhere. I look over my shoulder frantically at the small plane idling in a distant field and shout,
Dad!
Even though I know it's useless and he can't hear me. What the fuck have I gotten us into? None of this is what I envisioned when the well-dressed Mr. Owens came over half an hour after I got off the phone with him. God, was that really only earlier today? As soon as I signed on the dotted line, Mr. Owens told us we had to leave immediately, that we couldn't bring even a single belonging with us. When I explained the deal to Dad, glossing over the details and saying that I would be going to work for Mr. Owens' client in order to get him out of the country, Dad looked wary.
What kind of job is it that they offered to help out your convict father, Mel? This doesn't sound right.
So they color outside the lines. It's nothing bad or dangerous. I sat him down and spoke confidently. In truth, I had no idea what the hell the client offering this deal was into, but if there ever was a time to sell a pitch, this was it. You yourself said it. I'm one of the best up-and-coming ad agents in the business. Just think of this as very aggressive headhunting. They want me for the job, and they were willing to do what needed to be done to sweeten the pot. Dad still looks dubious, rightly so, but I could also see the spark of hope in his eyes. This was the only real way out of this mess, and we both knew it. If what he said was true, we were sitting ducks in this apartment. Mr. Owens arrived just then, tabling any further conversation. He said we needed to leave immediately.
When Dad started to explain about some of the dangers of leaving the apartment, Mr. Owens cut him off, saying he was already aware of the threats against us. So him showing up at my office, today of all days, wasn't a coincidence after all. My stomach bottomed out. What if he was the person who had sent those photos, or his client was? But then why come to me with such an insane and specific proposal? The very bizarre nature of it gave it some credibility, at least as far as Mr. Owens not working for the men who wanted my father dead. No, my best hope was that he and his client were just taking advantage of my vulnerable situation. And wasn't that just awesome? That in the best-case scenario, this guy was preying on my weakness instead of actively trying to kill my father. Dad and I exchanged a glance. Then Dad said to give him a second while he went to change. He couldn't very well go out in his pajamas. I had no idea what was really going through his head. Mr. Owens looked somewhat put out, but I didn't care. While Dad was upstairs, I sat with Mr. Owens in my living room, enduring the most awkward of silences. Mr. Owens pulled out his phone and began checking emails. When I couldn't stand the quiet anymore, I finally asked, "Why me, out of all the women in the world?" He shrugged casually, not looking up from his phone.
"You'll have to ask the client that, but I imagine it helps that you come from such a fertile family and that you're in a position of need regarding your father, plus your good breeding and education."
"Fertile?" I scoffed. "But I'm an only child." He glanced up briefly from his phone before looking back at it and thumbing through something on the screen.
"Your mother got a tubal ligation, but she's one of 8 children, and her father and mother both come from large families."
"Are you stereotyping Mexican families right to my face?" My back stiffened. He shrugged again.
"Not at all. I'm just a numbers man, and the odds are good you're fertile."
Enough of this crap. I stood up. "I'm going to check on my father."
"Good. We need to be going."
It would be bad if I punched an old man, right? I jogged up the stairs and knocked lightly on the guest room door where Dad's been staying. No response. "Dad?" I pushed open the door and stepped inside. Light came from the ensuite bathroom where the door was cracked. A sour, cold knot entered my stomach. I hurried forward and pushed open the door to the bathroom, which is where I found my father, dressed in a suit and freshly shaved, standing and staring down at 3 open bottles of prescription pills and a full glass of water.
"Dad, no!"
I rushed forward and knocked over the pill bottles, scattering white and yellow circles all over the counter. He tried to force me behind him.
"Go back downstairs, Melly. I'm not going to let you do this, whatever it is, for me. It doesn't feel right. Just let me end it, here and now."
He reached to start gathering the pills into a pile, but I knocked his arm away, scattering them again.
"No!"
I threw my arms around his middle, both hugging him and pushing him away from the counter. He stumbled, and when his back hit the far wall, it's like I could feel all the bravado leaving him. He hugged me back just as fiercely.
"Dad, swear you'll never..."
My voice broke.
"Never do anything like that again, no matter what."
He was breaking my heart. Couldn't he see that? "I'm going to be strong, but I need you to be strong for me, too." I felt him shake his head into my hair.
"I'm supposed to be strong for you. This was never supposed to touch you. Just let me..."
I pulled back from him. "Swear," I demanded, brooking no argument. "Never again. If you love me at all, swear it." I shook him, and finally he nodded. I could tell it felt like a defeat for him to do it, but he did. "I want to hear the words." My voice was harsh, but I didn't care. There was no way I could go through whatever the next year would hold without knowing he would be safe.
"I swear I won't hurt myself, but baby..."
He looked at me with anguish.
"You swear that you'll be safe too?"
I nodded. "I swear, Dad, we'll get through this. It's all going to be fine." Just then there was a knock on the outer bedroom door.
"I hate to interrupt," came Mr. Owen's voice, sounding anything but sorry. "But we are working under time constraints. If we could move things along..."
"I don't like this," Dad said, his head shaking. "If something seems too good to be true, it usually is."
I plastered on my brightest smile. "Everything's going to be fine. It's just a job, Dad. Trust me." I took his hand and pulled him through the bedroom to his closet. Get your shoes and let's go. He did, reluctantly, and we went. Yeah, so that saying Dad mentioned about everything seeming too good to be true? I've always known my father to be a very smart man, apart from the whole Ponzi scheme and getting involved with criminals thing. Because the second Dad and I stepped into the black van where Mr. Owens directed us to, two huge, burly men cuffed our hands behind our backs and shoved black bags over our heads. They must have injected Dad with something, because he stopped shouting almost immediately. I freaked out, thinking they killed him, that the client was actually the people who wanted Dad dead after all. But Mr. Owens calmly informed me, maybe from the front seat, "He's just taking a little nap, but will feel right as rain once he gets to his destination." "Wait, so you don't want him dead?" I asked in a confused panic. "Of course not." Mr. Owens sounded perplexed. "We signed a contract, did we not? As long as you live up to your end of the bargain, your father will be perfectly fine." Said as I was shoved in the back seat, and one of the muscled henchmen sat beside me. "The client doesn't want anything in your system," Mr. Owens continued in his calm voice, as if none of this was out of the ordinary. "He's very wary of anything that might harm a potential fetus, even though I informed him that was perfectly absurd, and it was highly unlikely at such an early stage of development. Still," Mr. Owens sighed, "he was adamant. Well, this is where I leave you. Pleasure making your acquaintance." And then I heard the sound of a car door opening and closing. Fucking lunatic! I started screaming my head off and flailing every body part possible. That lasted as long as it took for the muscle beside me to lift my hood and shove a gag in my mouth. Then he reached down and tied my ankles together. I spent the hour-long ride in the van and then an even longer ride in what sounded like a small jet, tied up like a stuck pig. And now that the bag is finally off my head and my legs are untied, I find myself out in the middle of... God, am I even in the States? I blink and look around at the endless, rolling, grassy hills, mountains out in the far, far distance. It could be one of the western states? I don't fucking know. I'm a city girl, for God's sake. But those are definitely cows on the hills in the distance. Fucking cows. Where the hell am I? I take one last, desperate look around for any other sign of life, and the phrase, "No one to hear you scream," echoes in my head. Two of the brutes who got off the plane with me drag me up the few wooden stairs to the doorway of the giant Western-style lodge. The large, three-story building stands starkly against the otherwise bleak landscape. There might have once been a facade with a sign over the door, but it looks like it was torn down a long time ago. Now the wood over the door is just grayish and weather-worn. The two men push it open and yank me inside. "Dad!" I still call out uselessly, trying to look over my shoulder. I stop fighting the men carrying me, but neither am I going to help them. I go limp, refusing to walk forward. The men on both sides keep me upright, dragging me through the entryway. Unlike my polished marble foyer in Manhattan, the interior of this place is wood, wood, and more wood. The walls are styled to look like it's a log cabin. I've been kidnapped by Paul fucking Bunyan. The toes of my pumps make a squeaking noise against the wood. I squeeze my eyes shut to all of it, wishing I could end this horrible nightmare, but knowing it hasn't even begun yet. Because I accepted the devil's bargain. Will Mr. Owens actually keep his end of the deal? Or was that all bullshit meant to placate me? Are they going to toss Dad out of the plane somewhere over the Pacific Ocean? Or do I dare even believe that he'll be safe? We start up a stairway, and the men dragging my lifeless body make no attempt to compensate for the fact that the wooden stairs dig into my bare ankles with every step. Ow! One of my shoes is knocked off, then the other, a third of the way up the stairs. Son of a... Okay, so going limp was a bad idea. Just wait a second, let me get my feet under me. They don't wait. Bastards. I lift my feet up so they'll clear the sharp-edged steps and try to pull out of their hold again as soon as we get to the top of the stairs. I cry out after the man on my left roughly jerks me forward again.
Let her go.
The command is boomed from a figure down the hall. Even though the two men holding me release their grip, I can't help taking a step back with them. The inside of the place is dark. There are tons of windows, but they're all covered with heavy drapes that create a dark, suffocating atmosphere. From the outside, the building was huge, far too big to be a single residence. My first thought that it's a resort seems to be correct. Downstairs, I briefly glimpsed a huge, open common room that might have once been used as a bar or for dancing. Up here, there's a long hallway with doors at regular intervals, like rooms at an inn. In the middle of nowhere, abandoned. Just like in The Shining. Oh, God, I'm going to die with an axe buried in my chest. Because at the other end of the hallway is a huge, hulking man who in the dim light is just a giant silhouette. The size of him is enough to scare the shit out of me, but I don't know the half of it. The next second, he takes several steps forward. The light from the single wall sconce barely illuminates his face. Just enough to see that if this is all a nightmare from hell, then he might be the devil himself. Chapter 4. Big. Huge. Monster.
Shit! Shit! This is the client?
His face. The left side is... The skin looks melted, with angry pink lines spidering across his cheek, down into his jaw, that has a heavy 5 o'clock shadow. The skin of his left eyebrow is slanted across the corner, so that he's eternally squinting, and I'm shocked the eyeball seems still intact. Not to mention that his ear... He wears his thick, dark brown wavy hair long on that side, but most of the ear is just... gone. I can't help taking a step backward. He's huge. The hallway looks too small compared to him. He's got to be, what, 6'4" or even 6'5", with shoulders so broad he looks like he might have to turn sideways to fit through doors. I have to get the hell out of here.
Leave,
the giant, disfigured man barks. The two men behind me immediately flee down the stairs. I take another step backward, about to join them.
Not you.
His booming voice freezes me in my tracks.
There, the doctor's waiting.
He thrusts an arm out toward the second door on the right, down the hall. Unlike the hallway, the room is brightly lit. It casts a rectangle of yellow light on the otherwise dark hallway. There's another person here? Maybe they can help me. If I can just let them know that I'm being kept here against my will, they could... But what about Dad? Wait... So do I really think the deal is still on after they blindfolded and manhandled me here? I still hurry inside the room. Anything is welcome if it means getting away from the terrifying beast in the hallway.
Examine her,
his low voice demands from behind me. I startle forward even quicker into the bright light of the room. The room, like everything else in the place, is all wood, but the window dressing and bedding is done in whites and grays. My eyes quickly zero in on the petite, brunette woman in her mid-40s, dressed in scrubs. She has a small table full of instruments and is standing beside the large bed that dominates the center of the room. She looks past me and nods, I assume at the giant, then steps back and gestures toward the bed.
You'll need to remove your clothing for the examination.
My mouth drops open, and then I feel my cheeks flame. Bracing myself, I turn back to the door. I keep my eyes somewhere in the vicinity of his giant chest. The dark gray and blue flannel shirt he's wearing appears to be straining at the seams to contain his biceps.
Oh, God! Oh, God! What have I done, putting my life in this man's hands?
Still, I manage to find my voice. Is this really necessary?
Yes.
One word is all I get. I steel myself. Where is my father being taken?
To a place where he'll be free of the reach of the United States government, and anyone else who might wish him harm.
Mr. Owens intimated so in the car, but this seems to confirm it. He knows about the trouble my father is in, or he's behind it. I can't help looking up, needing to see his face so I can try to gauge whether or not he's telling the truth. His voice is so... not monotone, exactly. That's the wrong word. Just matter of fact. Like, of course, that's where Dad's headed. I only manage to look at him for half a second before I have to glance down again. That face. Just... ugh. I couldn't tell if anything about him looked trustworthy or not. It's wrong and shallow of me. If we were out in polite society, I'd try to be more politically correct about someone with a disability or disfigurement. But considering the circumstances, I'm running a little short on empathy at the moment. How do I know you aren't behind all this? My whole body trembles as I ask it. That you aren't one of the very people my dad warned me about who wants him dead.
You don't,
comes his grumble.
Not until tomorrow, when he gets to his location. Then I can show you proof-of-life pictures of him with the local paper. You'll get regular updates every week throughout the year.
There's a short pause.
Or however long it takes.
I swallow hard. Oh my God. If what he's saying is true, then it is all real. A baby in exchange for my dad's life. And all the things it takes to make a baby. Holy shit! Is this actually my life? You can put this on while I examine you. I turn around to see the doctor holding out one of those terrible, thin hospital dressing gowns. I go forward and clutch it like a lifeline. The bathroom is just over there. She points to one side of the room where there's another small door. Yes, apparently this is my life, whether I want it to be or not. The giant at the door and those thugs with the black bags seem like no-take-backs kind of guys. In the bathroom, my entire body shakes as I slip off my Gucci pantsuit and underclothes, then pull on the hospital gown. I can't even look at myself in the mirror while I try to awkwardly tie the little tie behind my back and neck. The wooden floor is cool beneath my feet. The bathroom is clean, and what probably passes for high class around here. A marble-topped counter with brass fixtures. An abstract watercolor painting of a cowboy riding a bucking bull hangs right behind the toilet. So now I know. Hell is cowboy chic. Awesome. I squeeze my eyes shut tight and then clutch the material at the small of my back. No way to stop your ass from hanging out of these stupid robes. Holy shit, holy shit, holy shit! 10 hours ago I was waking up and heading into what I thought was just another ordinary day of work. And now I'm... God, I can't even think about my current situation too closely. Not if I want to make it through this and not freak the hell out. I open my eyes and don't let myself consider it any longer. I walk back out to the other room, hands still firmly holding my gown closed behind me. The giant is still standing right outside the doorway. That's the first thing I notice when I get back in the room. He's hovering just outside the sphere of light. I hope he's far enough away he doesn't notice the shiver that goes up and down my body. Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God! Maybe the exam will take the rest of the afternoon, or rather, evening. I glance out the window at the setting sun. Just how late is it? If it's nighttime, does that mean he'll expect, like, right away? When was the date of your last period? The doctor asks, either totally ignorant of my obvious freakout or doing a great job of pretending not to notice. She continues with the preliminaries like this is any other checkup. Are my periods regular? Have I noticed any other irregularities, or do I have any concerns I'd like to discuss with her? The talking part is over far too quickly, and then she's on to the exam. Just my luck, she's fast and efficient. Her pronouncement echoes throughout the room while the speculum is still inside me. She's a virgin. Even from the bed where I'm lying, my legs spread like the Thanksgiving turkey, I can hear his quick, heavy exhalation. Relief? Surprise? Mr. Owens said earlier that I was the perfect candidate. Was being a virgin part of the client's requirements? And if it was, how the hell did they know? It's not like I wear a sign on my forehead. No penises have tread here. I'm a successful 26-year-old woman. I work out, keep trim, and I get hit on plenty. At my age, it's weird to still be a virgin without, you know, religious reasons for it.
But all growing up, I'd watched my mother use her sex appeal like a weapon, luring in one man after another. She played up the stereotype of sexy Latina woman to the hilt, wearing tight, revealing clothing that highlighted her ample assets. I hated it. Hated the admiring glances the boys in my classes shot her way on the few instances she actually showed up at my school functions. Hated the way my father was still broken-hearted over her years after she'd left him. And I especially hated the fact that since I was her spitting image, everyone expected me to turn out just the same. As soon as my breasts began developing, I started wearing the baggiest, most unsexy clothing I could find. I cut my thick, glossy brown hair short. I studied hard and focused on